The King's Commissar by Duncan Kyle, dramatized by Neville Teller, with Richard Vernon and Dominic Rickards.
I'm in the vaults of famous merchant bankers Hilliard Cleef, and we're about to witness what has become one of the traditional ceremonies of the City of London, Hilliard Cleef's weekly gold shilling. Sir Horace Mallory is just retired as senior partner. Sir Horace, what's the ceremony all about?
Well, every Thursday at exactly 11 a.m. Greenwich Mean Time, winter and summer, we open our vaults to show the world that Hilliard Cleef holds no less than £100 million worth of gold bullion.
And what's the origin of this unusual custom?
It goes back to our founder, Sir Basil Zaharoff. Like every financial institution, our business is founded on confidence. Sir Basil firmly believed that the greatest confidence booster is gold, the actual metal, that is. So he ruled that at all times, the bank must have in its possession gold bullion to the value of £100 million sterling.
When did it all start?
Well, Sir Basil died in the 1930s, and he'd begun the practice a good few years before. We've been opening our vaults to the public for more than 60 years.
Mr. Lawrence Pilgrim has just taken over as senior partner. Coming from the States, Mr. Pilgrim, this must seem a rather quaint old custom to you.
Well, I know of nothing comparable on the other side of the pond, that's for sure.
15 seconds to go before 11 o'clock. At the moment, we're in a small viewing room looking at the great blank wall of glass. And now, rather like in a theatre, the lights are going up on the other side. I can't quite make out. Ah, yes, just coming into view is a strong room door.
The biggest in the City of London. 15 feet square, 5 feet thick, solid steel. Weighs God knows how much. We installed it 20 years ago when we took over the premises next door.
And now, slowly, very slowly, the great door is starting to open. And there, exposed to view, is gold. Gold bars, a mountain of gold, piled high like toy bricks, but all glowing metal and worth exactly 100 million.
Not quite.
How do you mean, Mr. Pilgrim?
The gold price dipped last week. To make up the precise 100 million pounds worth, we have to add a little more. Watch.
Ah, right. Inside the vault, a robot arm is rising behind the gold stack. A bar of gleaming metal grips securely in its rubber-coated pincers. It lays the bar gently on the top of the stack and descends from view behind the pile of gold ingots.
Well, there you are. 100 million sterling in gold bullion.
And as the great steel door starts closing and the lights begin to fade behind the glass screen, the weekly gold-showing ceremony comes to an end. This is John Smith at Merchant Bankers Hilliard Cleef returning you to the studio. Very nice. Thank you very much. Fascinating.
Not at all. Anytime. Horace, I'd like a word. Are you free now?
Well, Lawrence, what is it?
You know, I'm finding this familiarization process rather heavy going.
It's not easy taking over a complex business like ours.
There's all sorts of unexplained things. For example, this morning I came across something rather odd, and I wondered if you had an explanation.
Odd? How do you mean, exactly?
A payment. This payment here, Horace. £50,000 on the 17th of July every year to Zurich's bank. You know anything about that?
Yes, I think I might.
Would you care to explain, then? It's been going on for years, since 1920, for God's sake. That's a heck of a time, Horace. You know how much it tots up to?
Over $3 million, I know.
And that's before you start computing interest. So what the hell's it all about?
Show me the file. See here, at the bottom of this page, it says, see senior partner's note. Did you check up on that?
No.
Then perhaps you should.
What's a senior partner's note?
I'll have the note sent up. Miss Frobisher?
Yes, Sir Horace?
Have the senior partner's note sent up, please.
Yes, Sir Horace.
Most remiss of me not to have mentioned it to you before. It's supposed to be my job to introduce you to our curious ways.
Horace...
Yes?
We're talking about £50,000 for over 60 years, right? How long were you senior partner, Horace?
30 years or so. Yes, 32.
And you never questioned a sum like that? Never?
No, I didn't. When you've read the senior partner's note, you'll understand why. Ah, Miss Frobisher.
Here they are, Sir Horace.
You may put the box on that table there. Thank you.
Will that be all, Sir Horace?
Thank you, Miss Frobisher. There's a double security lock in that box. My key is still on my watch chain. You have the other.
Yeah.
Shall we open it now, together?
Yes, yes. Why all the melodramatics for crying out loud? Oh, don't tell me, it's traditional. There. How many senior partners' notes are there in here?
About 50, I'd say. There's a number printed on that file.
28.
Envelope 28. Let me see. Ah, yes, here we are. Addressed to the senior partner. That's you now, won't you?
This payment must not be missed, nor must it be questioned at any time for any reason. Failure to follow this instruction would have extremely serious consequences. Who the hell? Initialed Z.
Or Z, as we say over here. Zaharov, Sir Basil himself.
But he's been dead.
Nearly 50 years, I know.
Look, I'm sorry, Horace. You work for the guy, I know that. But it is one hell of a legacy to commit your heirs and successors to, and without any explanation at all.
But you didn't know him, Lawrence. Basil Zaharov was a most remarkable man, gifted with extraordinary foresight, among many other things. I tell you, even now, it would never cross my mind to countermand one of his instructions.
Not after 50 years?
No. Nope.
Well, I'm sorry, Horace, but it certainly does cross my mind.
So I see. Well, I can only advise against it. That's my role now, isn't it, to advise?
Look, Horace, I'll meet you halfway. We'll keep everything close and quiet, right? Miss Frobisher?
Yes, Mr. Pilgrim?
Would you send Mr. Graves in here, please?
Right away, Mr. Pilgrim.
Lawrence, do let this sleeping dog lie.
I'm sorry, Horace. I can't work that way. We have to find out what the hell is going on around here.
What's up, Lawrence?
Jack, we got a little problem here.
Morning, Graves.
Sir Horace.
Will you listen to this? For 60 years now, Hilliard Cleef has been paying £50,000 a year to an anonymous account in a bank in Switzerland. There's no explanation. All there is, well, we have a kind of hereditary note to the senior partner that the payment must continue and not be queried.
Ouch.
That's my reaction exactly. Now, the instruction was given by Sir Basil Zaharov before I was even born. He died in 1936. Sir Horace has continued to honor that instruction. That was his privilege. But I feel now that maybe the time has come to ask a few discreet questions.
$3 million paid.
Right.
Whoa.
So, what we're going to do is this. You are going to Switzerland, Jack. First available plane. You go to this Zurich's bank. You do your damnedest to worm something out of them. Now, we know all about Swiss discretion. All right, but Hilliard Cleef's goodwill is worth something in financial circles. Use that as a bargaining counter if you have to. See what you can do, but don't stir up any mud, okay? Just keep it low profile.
Extraordinary, Mr. Graves, that for over 60 years, Hilliard Cleef have made this annual payment and there has been no other communication between us. You, as the first representative of your bank, to come here and speak to us about it.
And now that I am here, Herr
Banker. And now that you are here, Mr. Graves, I have something for you. This package.
What is it?
Mr. Graves, my bank holds an instruction that should a Hilliard Cleef representative make a personal inquiry about this annual deposit at any time, this packet is to go to the senior partner. In this case, Mr. Lawrence Pilgrim, since we are aware that the Horace Mallory is standing aside. And please follow instructions, Mr. Graves. The envelope is for your principal. Do not be tempted to open it.
And here the package is, Lawrence. Unopened, as you see.
Thank you, Jack. Well, let's take a look.
This man, Winkler, did he seem in the picture at all?
I'd say not, Sir Horace. He was just carrying out instructions laid down long ago.
Holy smoke. Jack, you excuse us for a minute.
Of course.
Seems a lot of it, Lawrence.
Well, I haven't looked at the other stuff yet. This covering letter's enough to start with. Just listen to this. Sir Basil Zaharov would have known better than to approach Zurich's bank. He would have resisted the temptation. You, whoever you are, could not. The annual and presumably unexplained payment must have struck you as requiring an explanation. It is forthcoming. Attached to this letter, you will find the first part of a narrative. I must advise you not to throw it away. The first part contains instructions for obtaining the second for the third, and so on. There are 7 parts altogether. I trust you will find the narrative interesting, and will pursue the quest for all 7 parts, but I must add a warning. If within 3 months you have not obtained parts 1 to 6, part 7 will be directed into other hands.
The arrangements are made, and there is no way you can alter them. Should Part 7 fall into these other hands, I confidently predict that the consequences will be catastrophic.
I choose the word with care. It is in no sense an overstatement. It's signed H.G.D. Well, crap. All this stuff, it's garbage.
I wonder.
Ancient history.
I've often noticed how different the attitude most Americans take to history compared with the British. You know, the passage of a few years rarely changes anything fundamental. Facts stay the same.
Look, Horace, this means nothing to me. If you want to study it more closely, you're welcome.
I rather think I'd better. I don't like the tone of that covering letter.
I'll leave you to it, then. Stay here. Don't disturb yourself.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Henry George Dickerston.
My name is Henry George Dickerston. This narrative begins on the night of Saturday, the 30th of March, 1918. I was on leave in London, having served for some months in His Majesty's Monitor Makepeace on coastal bombardment duties, mainly off Heligoland. I had few friends in London, so I decided to attend a performance at the Gaiety Theatre and take a quiet supper afterwards. I had, as was my custom, taken a small box. About halfway through the performance, I heard someone enter behind me. I did not have time to turn round before I felt a hand on my shoulder.
Commander Dickerston?
Yes?
Who are you, sir?
My name is Stott. I'm from the Admiralty. Will you collect your coat and hat, please, Commander, and come with me?
Come with you? Can you prove who you are?
My card, sir. I'm sorry.
Very well.
I have a car waiting.
What's all this about?
You know better than to ask, Commander.
Fresh orders, I take it.
We are bound, Commander Dickerston, for Buckingham Palace. You have an audience with His Majesty the King.
Ah, Dickerston, come in.
Your Majesty.
Thank you for coming. Let me introduce you. Mr. Zaharoff is a director of Vickers Maxim and Company. The war effort is critically dependent on the armaments his firm is producing. And this is Mr. Clark. Mr. Clark is employed in the library of the British Museum, and has been for
57 years, Your Majesty. Since 1861. I should have...
Tell me about yourself, Commander. Your background.
Well, sir, I was born in St. Petersburg in Russia in 1893. My mother was the daughter of a Royal Naval officer. My father was in the fur and timber trades until he became British consul in Pierre. Both are now dead.
You have brothers and sisters?
No, sir. I was educated privately until the time came for me to return to Britain and enter the Royal Naval College at Osborne.
Ah, Osborne.
I became a midshipman in 1909, sub-lieutenant the following year, and lieutenant...
How good is your Russian?
As good as my English. If anything, somewhat better.
I'm told you returned to Russia for a period.
Yes, sir. For 2 years I was on the staff of the naval attache in St. Petersburg.
Commander Dickerston, you know the plight of my cousin the Tsar and the rest of the Imperial family.
What I've read in the papers, sir, no more.
The reports are all too correct. The Bolshevik leadership has imprisoned them all and is even now treating with the Germans. As a result, German armies will be free to fight against our own on the Western Front.
Forgive me, sir.
Mr. Zaharov.
Simply to make the point, sir, that at the moment there are many German troops on Russian soil, and they do represent a threat to the Bolsheviks.
Quite correct, Mr. Zaharov. And that fact, Commander Dickerston, is the basis of what we are about to discuss. There seems the possibility of a private negotiation which stands a chance of achieving the release of the Imperial family. But before I tell you more, have I your word that nothing of this will be spoken beyond these walls?
I swear, sir.
I am aware that I am now breaking that oath sworn to my sovereign, but I do so in the knowledge that no harm can now come from my personal treachery. In any case, I was to have so much of treachery, and so soon, that I could legitimately regard any oath as void. Disingenuous. Disingenuous to a degree.
Very well. It appears that if the Imperial family is to be rescued and brought to safety, it is necessary, however distasteful it may prove, to treat with this Bolshevik, this Lenin, and to do so privately.
You mean, sir...
Fortunately, the means to communicate informally with this Lenin are to hand. And also, it seems, the possibility of something to be offered in exchange for the persons and safe conduct of the Imperial family. You will do all you can to further this?
Of course, sir.
I know the basis of the offer. but it would be entirely improper for me to know in detail what is to happen. Mr. Zaharov has planned the operation. I can only give my blessing to the brave and generous men who may yet serve the Imperial family.
Sir,
I thank you, gentlemen, and I wish you Godspeed.
Now, Clark, sign the letter.
But I really don't see that I...
Commander Bickerstone, Clark is about to sign this typewritten letter to his friend Lenin.
His friend?
Which you, Commander, will deliver. Oh, during his half century in the reading room of the British Museum, Clark befriended and served not only the men who wrote the creed, Marx and his jackal Engels, but subsequently their follower Ulyanov, now named Lenin, who is putting it into practice.
I can't. Don't you see? For the last time, Clark, think of your wife. Mrs. Clark is extremely ill, Commander, I'm sorry to say, but I am able to help her. Is that not so, Clark? So you will sign the letter, won't you? And you, Dickerson, will deliver it to Lenin in Russia. After all, it's no betrayal of friendship. It only reads, Dear Vladimir Ilyich, this is to introduce Lieutenant Commander H.G. Dickerson, R.N. I know how busy you must be with great affairs, but I beg you for the sake of our friendship to receive him. He bears a document of the greatest importance, which I am certain you would not wish to pass into any hands but your own. There. There's nothing in that. Is there, Clark? No, oh, very well.
And the envelope, I think, in your own hand. From William Clark, British Museum, London. Yes. Excellent. Mr. Clark is leaving. Goodbye, Clark. I trust you and your wife will both benefit from the Spanish sunshine. And now, in addition to this letter of introduction, you will deliver these, unopened, you understand, to the men they are addressed to. Here is your passport, and these are the documents.
A second packet for Lenin?
Certainly, the terms of the offer.
But how am I expected to deliver this?
You must persuade Lenin to permit its delivery. It must be handed over unopened, and then, and this is imperative, brought back to my hands, duly signed.
A letter addressed to His Imperial Majesty, Nicholas II, Tsar of all the Russias.
I left the next day for the land I had loved since childhood. But never had I expected to be returning to Moscow under such circumstances.
Halt! Comrade!
Who is this man?
What do you want?
I have a letter for V.I. Lenin.
You mean for Comrade Lenin?
Yes, for Comrade Lenin.
Who's it from?
An old friend.
Give it to me.
Only to Comrade Lenin himself or his personal secretary.
Do you imagine that Comrade Lenin has time to waste with bourgeois postmen?
I imagine that he might be angry if this letter weren't delivered.
Oh, very well. Follow me.
Who is this letter from?
From Mr. William Clark at the British Museum in London.
And who are you?
Commander Dickerson, Comrade Lenin, of the Royal Navy.
Oh, so now Clark has naval officers delivering his messages, eh? You seen him? Is he well?
Yes, he's well.
Good. Good, let me see what he says. Ah, he's a splendid man. From Marx onwards, who knows where we'd all have been. It's the other document he speaks of. You have it?
Yes, Comrade Lenin.
Let me see. Now, read it, Svedlov.
You're Zakharov's emissary?
I simply brought his letter, sir.
What, sir? Address me as comrade.
£50 million worth.
But can Zakharov be trusted?
£50 million worth of arms. It's worth far more than all the Romanovs put together.
But can we trust him?
We need the arms. They would be decisive. Commander, please wait outside. You will be summoned in due course.
When I was summoned, it was to find that I'd been converted into Comrade Commissar Vasily Vasilievich Yakovlev and been placed in command of a force of 150 horsemen. But more of that later, in the second part of my narrative, which will be found in a cavity in the House of Four Forks, a mile from the Meridian.
A cavity in the House of Four Forks, a mile from the Meridian? What the devil is the fellow playing at?
Huntley?
Fergus, you're the acknowledged crossword wizard of Hilliardcleef. What do you make of this? A cavity in the House of Four Forks, a mile from the Meridian.
How many letters, Sir Horace?
It's a clue, but not to a crossword puzzle. Any ideas?
Let's think. The Meridian. Well, that's Greenwich, isn't it? So this house is a mile from Greenwich. Blackheath, perhaps?
That makes sense. Good thinking. What do you make of the House of Four Forks, though?
Four Forks? Ah! Advantage of an Oxford education.
What do you mean?
Four Forks would be quadrifurcus in Latin, and then in Middle English, carfuc. That, after one more metamorphosis, becomes Carfax, which happens to be the name of the centre of Oxford, where four roads meet.
Fergus, your erudition never ceases to astonish.
Any time, Sir Horace.
Thank you, Fergus. Much obliged. So what we have is a cavity in a house named Carfax, situated about a mile from Greenwich, with Blackheath a useful starting point for the search.
Horace, this guy Dickiston's a joker. He gives us part one, then sets us chasing part two. There's a whole trail laid, and he's going to have us running our butts off. And then, at the end, nothing. Zilch, I can smell it.
And the threatened catastrophe?
I can't make myself believe in that. Just think, Horace. In 1918, Dickiston's already a lieutenant commander, so he's 25 then. By now he's dead. Everybody's dead. Lenin, Zaharov, the king, the czar. Are you saying Dickiston spent half a century plotting a disaster he wouldn't live to see?
But I can't get away from the fact that Zaharov seems to have agreed a payment of £50,000 a year in perpetuity. Have you any idea how much that was in 1920?
Sure. A crazy sum. So maybe Dickiston had something on Zaharov. What else could all this be except blackmail? But now it's Dickiston's ghost we're paying.
There's one thing that isn't dead.
What's that?
Hilliardcleef.
You think he can wreck the bank? Now, from the grave?
I don't know, but I feel we must find out. And quickly.
Horace, you and I were in a strange position. Once you were boss, now I'm in charge. But while you're breaking me in, we have an excellent working arrangement, which actually works because we respect each other's methods. Now, my whole instinct is to forget this thing and cancel the next payment. Yours is not.
Most certainly it's not.
Based on what you know of Zaharov?
Mainly. He'd never have agreed to that payment except under the most intense pressure, and he'd have ended it as soon as possible. Yet when he died, he'd paid up for 16 years. Look, Lawrence, let me take full responsibility for following Dickiston's trail. I'll keep you informed all along the line, but if it goes wrong, the blame rests fairly and squarely on my shoulders. I promise I won't spend a penny more than I have to, but I warn you, I suspect it's going to cost us a fair bit.
All right. On your head be it. You'll want a right-hand man. Use Jack Graves.
Mrs. Drummond?
Miss Drummond, was it you who telephoned about the Greenwich Georgian Society?
Yes, it was.
Then come in. I haven't much time. Are you a resident or new to the district or what?
Neither, I'm afraid. Here's my card.
Huh. So, you're a banker, Mr. Graves. How can I help you?
It's an odd little matter. A client of ours, very long-standing, but just a trifle eccentric, took to setting us little puzzles concerning his instructions. Now, unfortunately, he died recently, and one unsolved mystery may concern a house in this area.
Really? How exciting.
Miss Drummond, does the name Carfax mean anything to you?
Oh, certainly. Carfax House, of course.
Here in Blackheath?
Not a quarter of a mile from this very spot.
Well, that's convenient, Miss Drummond. Can you tell me anything about the place?
How fortunate you came to me. I mean, it hasn't been known by that name for years. You could have searched for Yonks and drawn a blank.
And now I won't have to.
No. The Georgian Society has come to your aid. But, oh, dear Mr. Graves, if only you knew how short of funds we are.
Miss Drummond, of course we'd be happy to make a donation.
I was thinking of 500 guineas.
I beg your pardon?
500 guineas. A bill arrived here this very morning for that amount from a firm of solicitors, and they did almost nothing, almost nothing.
Well, a reasonable research fee.
Reasonable is what the market will bear. That's what my father always said.
Oh, very well. 500.
Guineas?
Isn't that a little too Georgian, Miss Drummond?
Well, £525, Mr. Graves, if you prefer it.
So be it.
Well, the original Carfax House was built in 1790, and it was destroyed during a Zeppelin raid in 1917. It was rebuilt in the 20s by Mr. Cavendish, so from then on it was called Cavendish House. And then, you'd scarcely believe it, but in 1941 it received a direct hit again. The roof caved in and only half the walls were left standing. Someone rebuilt it after the war.
Who?
Oh, he was something of a recluse. His name was, Dickerston. Now it's owned by some frightful people called Smart. He's in advertising or something, and she's a model, or that's what she calls herself. Ghastly.
All right, come in.
Mr. Smart?
Yeah? It's a bit late, don't you think? Look, whatever you're selling, come back another time, huh?
Please, my card. It's quite important.
Oh. Hilliard Cleef. First time I heard of a merchant bank going door to door.
Well, we have a request, Mr. Smart. It may seem a little unusual, but we think you may be able to help us.
Huh? Well, come in. My wife and I have just been having dinner. Perhaps you'll join us in a cup of coffee. Darling, this is Mr. Graves from Hilliard Cleef, the bankers.
How'd you do, Mrs. Smart?
Nothing to do with our overdraft, I hope. You're in trouble again, Stevie.
Nothing like that, Mrs. Smart.
Hilliard Cleef, a merchant banker, sweetie.
Well?
They're in the big time.
Really? Oh, coffee?
Thank you. Black, please.
Well, what have we got that you want?
I wouldn't put it quite like that, Mr. Smart. The thing is, we want to search your house.
Search the house? You know, when the police are you, what do you expect?
Oh, no, no, Mrs. Smart, nothing
like
that.
I'm not having people poking in all my cupboards.
And of course there'd be a fee to cover any inconvenience.
Call it, Gloria. Let the man speak.
Mrs. Smart, I assure you, there's no question at all of touching your personal possessions. Now, the man who rebuilt this place after the war was a client of ours. He died recently and left a bit of a puzzle. He claims to have hidden some very important family papers in the fabric of the house, and we've simply got to find them.
The fabric? Does that mean lifting floorboards? Pulling up all my carpets?
Oh, that is an inconvenience.
Well, perhaps we could do this in two stages. Stage one would just involve searching the loft, the cellar, and so on. Now, if that fails to turn up the missing documents, we'd move on to something more thorough. That would have to involve removing the furniture and putting it in store temporarily.
This is ridiculous. Where are we expected to live while all this is going on?
The Savoy.
Oh, I prefer the Hilton.
Very well, the Hilton.
How long would you take?
About a week.
And the fee for the inconvenience?
How much do you suggest?
5,000.
Agreed.
On top of the hotel bill, of course.
Yes, but that's only if we have to proceed to stage two. For stage one alone, say 1,000.
All right, done.
Well, that's all very well, but how do I know what sort of a mess you're going to make of my decorations while all this is going on?
Tell you what, Mrs. Smart, if we do have to proceed to stage two, we'll redecorate your house top to bottom. How about that?
Nothing?
Not a thing.
Well, in that case, we'll have to buy the house and pull it down, brick by brick. Whatever its market value, it can't cost us more than 200,000. What would it cost to rebuild to a higher standard? Another 50,000? We could sell it at a profit. Buy it.
Of course, it's very pretty, but hardly any of it's original. Why are you knocking it down, anyway?
Out of need, madam.
Yes, well, no great loss. Ours, of course, is authentic Georgian.
Is it? Perhaps you know Miss Drummond, then.
The Georgian Society, oh yes, we're staunch supporters. That sundial's genuine, part of the original building. I love it. Do you think...
Where?
Over there, the cockatrice.
Heraldic, isn't it?
That's right, also known as a basilisk.
You, up there, switch off!
Right up.
Sir Horace, the sundial.
Evil, you see. A caged cockatrice. The embodiment of evil.
Thank you, madam, very much. You've been most helpful.
Helpful?
The embodiment of evil, Sir Horace, do you see? I hardly think we'll be needing the bulldozer. We can start here, I think, where the shadow hits the wall. I think we've located Commander Dickiston's second installment.
No wonder I'd seen eyebrows raised in pleasure and surprise on those hard, determined faces. The Bolsheviks had been promised weapons, and what an arsenal. £50 million sterling in arms. For Lenin, trapped between the Germans and the White Russians. For Trotsky, commissar for an army nearly empty-handed. For Sverdlov, head of state to a tottering conspiracy. It was a gift from the gods. Except that it wasn't quite a gift. The payment was to be the Romanovs. The imperial family they'd be well rid of. Sakharov the savior. No wonder a plan was quickly devised to propel me along my way.
Commander Dickerson, you are to be commissar, Vasily Vasilievich Yakovlev. Take this envelope. It contains all your papers.
Commissar?
Indeed. On a mission of the greatest importance for the Soviet Central Executive Committee. I am its chairman. My signature and the committee's seal are at the foot of that page. That paper demands immediate compliance with your wishes on pain of death. We must hope it works.
Hope?
You are going to Tobolsk. That is a long way from the Kremlin.
Oh, but surely with such
orders... You think that suddenly Comrade Lenin's word is law from the Ukraine to the Pacific? My friend, it takes time. The regional Soviets are made up of men who've spent their lives working secretly and in fear of authority. The old instincts remain, even when the distant ruler is Comrade Lenin himself. They are in charge. Word from Moscow is considered. Sometimes it's accepted, but sometimes the order is destroyed and the messenger with it. You'll be in danger, Comrade Commissar Yakovlev, whatever papers you carry. Be in no doubt of it.
Don't worry about me. I'm used to danger.
You understand the offer you're carrying.
Arms in exchange for the Romanovs.
Yes, but there's more. Nikolai Romanov himself will be paying for the arms. He has a hidden fortune in London. He releases the money to Zaharov. Zaharov releases the arms to us. We release Romanov and his family to his cousin, the English king. For the deal to succeed, Romanov must sign your paper. He's being held at Tobolsk. You'll travel to Tumen by train, and I'll arrange for you to be met by a troop of 150 horsemen, so you can arrive in style. But remember, there are people in that region, Ekaterinburg, for instance, whose only aim will be to stop you. They want Romanov dead.
Commissar Yakovlev, here on the instructions of the Central Committee.
Your papers, Commissar?
You're in command here. You must be Colonel Kobylinski.
That's my name.
Let me see those papers, Comrade Colonel.
And who are you?
People's Soviet of the Urals. That's who I am.
I'll have those back if you don't mind.
You come direct from Comrade Sverdlov.
That's right.
You actually met him.
I did. Comrade Lenin and Comrade Trotsky as well.
Well, remember, you are beyond the Urals now, my friend.
Who is that man?
Rushki from Ekaterinburg. Sometimes calls himself Brona, a pseudonym from underground days.
Tell me about the former Tsar. How is he?
Well enough. They all are, except the son. I suppose you know he's a hemophiliac. He's only just getting over a severe attack. He's still in pain.
You! Comrade. Your presence must be discussed. I've brought some members of my Soviet.
What's there to discuss? You've seen my papers.
Papers can be forged.
Well, mine aren't.
We've only your word for that. I don't know Comrade Sverdlov's signature. Does anyone here know Comrade Sverdlov's signature?
No, I've seen
him. Who is this supposed commissar? He says he is here on Comrade Sverdlov's orders. How do we know he isn't part of a plot to rescue the Romanovs?
Send a telegram to Comrade Sverdlov.
This isn't Moscow, comrade. There are no telegraphs here. The nearest is at Tumen.
Good, go there then. We'll find you a horse. No, Comrade Ruski is partly right. I am here because of Nikolai Romanov. And I am here to take him away.
Huh?
Tell me, has he any value in Russia now? He and his brood are no use to any of us. But he has value to others. In exchange for him and his family, we are going to receive more weapons than you can dream of. Enough to equip an army to the highest standards.
Yes, comrades. But will it be an army to put him back on the throne?
Our army, comrade. An army to smash the whites, to defeat the Czech Legion, to win the Revolutionary War. Once he's gone, Russia will never see Nikolai Romanov again. That's my task. And those are my orders from Comrade Lenin and Comrade Sverdlov.
Just remember, Comrade Commissar, that the way to Moscow lies through Ekaterinburg.
And what exactly does that mean, Comrade Rudsky?
It means, Comrade, that Romanov is ours and we mean to keep him.
Ours?
You know what I mean. The Urals Soviet. And that's why I'm coming with you.
As you wish. And now, Colonel Kobylinski, I'd better see this enemy of the people who's going to equip the people's army.
Commissar Yakovlev?
Your Majesty.
A form of address I've grown less accustomed to lately.
A form I'll be able to use only when we are alone.
I understand. And now, why are you here?
Your Majesty, the Central Executive Committee have decided that you and your family must be moved from Tobolsk within the next 24 hours.
Moved? Where to?
The ultimate intention is to get you all safely abroad.
We go nowhere without knowing all the details. Where are you planning to send us? And in any case, my son is ill and can't be moved. I won't leave without him.
Your Majesty, my orders are that you must go from here. The preference is that you go of your own free will. But either way, go you must.
I see. What are the arrangements?
At Tumen, a train is to be waiting.
Bound for where?
That we shan't know until we reach Tumen. Further orders from Moscow will be waiting for me. All I know is that Comrade Sverdlov wants you and your family to leave the country in safety.
And my son?
He can stay here until he recovers. And any other members of your family, if necessary, to be with him.
Well, thank you for that. I must discuss this. There are family decisions.
Of course. Your Majesty, there is one other thing.
Well?
I have a document with me for you to read and, I believe, sign.
What is it?
I'm only the messenger, no more than that. But I believe it's concerned with your release.
I see. I will look at it. And when do we leave for Tumen?
Early tomorrow morning, sir. By horse-drawn sleigh. 4 a.m.
Sir Horace, it's that man from Oxford you are so anxious to speak to.
Ah, put him on.
Certainly, Sir Horace.
Dr. Aston, I gather you're an expert on the Russian Revolution.
I make no claim to expertise, Sir Horace. I've studied the subject for some years, written a book.
Name Yakovlev mean anything to you?
Oh, yes, if it's Vasily Yakovlev, a commissar.
That's the chap. Tell me.
Well, he was the man who went off with the Tsar and all the jewels, then vanished.
The jewels?
Trainload of them. Tremendous mystery man, Commissar Yakovlev. Why? Have you come across something about him?
No, nothing like that. Sorry if I've raised a hair, but thank you. Thank you very much. A trainload of jewels.
We're going east. Away from Moscow. Where are we bound for? Omsk?
No, sir. We're going to Moscow, but by the long way round. My orders were to bypass Ekaterinburg. This is the only way to do it.
Those men that came with us, do they know?
The dangerous one is that fellow called Rushki. Or is it sometimes Bernard? But I shipped enough vodka on board last night to make sure they were all too drunk to care which direction the train left in. They'll find out soon enough. But by then, I hope it'll be too late to do anything about it. Now, the document, sir. Have you had time?
I've signed it.
Excellent. May
I... It's not here.
Not here, sir? Then where?
Tobolsk. I signed it before we left. It's with my son. When he is brought safely to join us, you will have it.
I see. Your Majesty, it's absolutely vital that we trust each other. Please, this paper, look at it.
Well, this is my cousin's signature, Commissar.
It's a letter sent by your children's tutor, Gibbs, to a woman in England.
So I see. Why did Cousin George sign it?
To demonstrate its bona fides, sir.
I don't understand.
Sir, I am not a Soviet commissar. My name is Dickerson. I'm an officer in the Royal Navy. I've been sent to Russia by your royal cousin to try to secure your removal and that of your family to England.
Thank God. Thank God. Thank God.
Ah, the wanderer returns.
What are you doing in my compartment, Ruski?
Yakovlev, you're a fraud.
What do you mean?
I mean, I know the truth about you, Yakovlev, or whatever your name is.
The truth? The truth is I've been sent to get the Romanovs.
Yes, sent. Sent from London. Ah, surprised you, have I?
Who are you?
Henri Bonnard, at your service, for the moment.
Henri? You're French?
Oui, monsieur.
And what are you doing here in the middle of Siberia?
I serve various interests. For the moment, I am to help you when you need help. And you will.
I don't understand. You're a member of the Ural Soviet.
It's not difficult. All you need is to be more rabid than the rest.
Oh, good God, what's happened?
I don't know. Someone's blocked the light. Hey, you, comrade.
Yes, sir.
Are you in charge?
Yes, I am.
Come up here. Here. Let me give you a hand.
Thank you, comrade.
This is Comrade Commissar Yakovlev. He is in charge of this train.
And who are you, comrade?
My name is Petrov, Comrade Commissar. I lead the railway workers in Omsk.
Then please examine this document.
Yes, I understand. I apologize, comrade, but you can't take the train through.
Well, why not? Well, you can see my orders are from the central executive, from Comrade Svetlov. Is this what happens when Moscow sends an order?
I'm sorry, comrade. We have to respect all our comrades. You bring us orders. But we've had a request from our brother workers in the Ural Soviet. Please, they ask us, do not accept passage of this train. Please. That's what they say. Yet your paper threatens death. That was always Moscow's way. Comrade Commissar, we live in a new world now where worker listens to worker.
So what happens? Does the train stand here forever in the snow?
Oh, no, Comrade Commissar. You return along the track and then make for Ekaterinburg.
And it is on that fateful name, fateful that is for Tsar Nikolai and his family, but also perhaps for you who read these words, that I conclude the second part of my narrative. To obtain the third part, and I need hardly remind you that you've only 3 months to locate all seven, you are to present the deeds of Carfax House to the manager of the Irish Linen Bank in Liverpool, together with £50,000. Both are to be passed to the holder of a special account, numbered X253.
And in return we get packet three?
That's the idea. And since we bought the house, we have the deeds.
£250,000. It's a darned heavy price to pay for a pig and a poke.
We have an agreement, Lawrence.
Okay. Go ahead. Who are you planning to send to Liverpool? Jack Graves?
Oh, yes, I think so.
And so we started back on the long journey west to Tumen, and thence to Ekaterinburg. Ruski went back to his compartment, so I lay on my bunk and tried to doze.
You, Commissar Yakovlev, up on your feet. You're under arrest.
Arrest for Romanov and everyone with him.
By whose orders?
On the authority of the Ural Soviet.
But do you know who I am? I represent the Central Executive Committee.
Keep all that for your trial.
Who do you represent?
I am Alexander Beloborodov, chairman of the Ural Soviet, the lawful government of the Ural region.
And I travel on the direct orders of the head of state. Here is my authority. Here, signed by Comrade Svetlov himself.
He said blood soaked Nikolai III. You know as well as I do what they're doing. It's a dirty deal with the Germans because the damn Tsarin is a boss.
Well, how do I know what's in their minds in Moscow? I do as I'm told. And my orders are to deliver the whole Romanov family to Moscow. It's their business what they do with them.
What's going on here?
Ah, Comrade Beloborodov. I see you have found our pet commissar.
Yes, he's waving some piece of paper signed by Comrade Svetlov.
Personally, I'd hang you, Yakovlev. But I did telegraph Moscow and check on that authorization, Comrade Beloborodov. It's not a forgery.
Then I suppose we'll have to let you go. There. I want you out of this city, Yakovlev. Understood? You take this train and its contents back to Tumen, right?
If you say so, comrade.
That's what I say. There are two sealed carriages filled with trunks and boxes at the rear. We've no time to examine them now. But I'll be in Tumen before the end of the week and I'll do it then, right? Ruski, see the commissar on his way whilst I take care of our Romanov guests.
Oh, I will, comrade.
You know that university professor, Ipatiev?
Uh-huh.
He comes from a good aristocratic family. so he won't mind giving up that great white house of his. We'll lock them up in there.
The Tsar, did he sign the paper? Have you got it?
It's still with him.
Oh, we have got to get it.
Do you reckon there's any chance of freeing?
Oh, white horses to the rescue? No, my friend, they're as good as dead unless they can be used as bargaining counters.
So what do we do?
Nothing. If the rescue is tried, the first thing the guards will do is shoot them. There are white Russian troops all over Siberia out to restore the throne. No. The only thing that'll save the Romanovs' necks is that paper, signed and on Lenin's desk.
Well, there's not much I can do about that now, is there? It's up to you.
Yes.
I've got to return to Tumen. I considered the situation. The paper was in Tobolsk, within reach of Tumen. I had the train. Simple. I must go and get the signed paper from Nazarevich, young Alexei. As for my own safety, now I not only had Sverdlov's signed authority, I was under orders from the Ural Soviet to guard the contents of the train. I was secure both ways. But what was I guarding? I had seen it loaded as we'd prepared originally to leave Tobolsk, but it was just boxes and bags, chests and parcels and cases. What lay inside? I decided to find out. And it was dazzling. Nikolai Romanov had been monarch of 1/6 of the earth. I found silks and velvets, china and crystal, paintings and icons, and jewels. Boxes of jewels. One wooden chest was filled to the top with a huge variety of gold coins. When I realized what an immense treasure was in my charge, I made haste to close everything and lock the carriage doors. The first light of dawn was showing as I began to make my way forward. When I looked out, I saw that a troop of Cossacks were attacking a train ahead, which was defended by only a score or so of revolutionary guards. It took some time, but in the end, the red flags were pulled down from either end of the train, and the survivors surrendered. Shortly afterwards, I was marched to the Cossack general, Jutov.
Where is the Tsar?
Imprisoned, General, at Ekaterinburg.
Damn! But he's alive and well?
To the best of my knowledge.
And you, who are you?
Commissar Yakovlev, sent by the central executive to bring the royal family to Moscow.
Why? What do Lenin and his crew want with them?
The plan is to get them abroad safely as part of a deal.
What deal?
I believe, General, it involves the Germans leaving the country.
Yeah, well, I'll go along with that. Where are you bound for?
Three of the royal children are still at Tobolsk. I'm going to
them. Yeah, well, why did you leave Ekaterinburg?
I fell out with the Ural Soviet.
Did you? Did you, by heaven?
What will you do? Take Ekaterinburg?
With my little force. What do you take me for? But don't worry, it will be retaken, and before too long. That's a promise. No, what I'm thinking of is riding to Tobolsk and rescuing the young people. Is the Tsarevich there, young Alexei?
Yes, why?
The succession, man, the succession.
Don't try anything, General, I beg you. They'd be killed at the first sign of soldier. You'd never get near enough.
But you would.
The Bolsheviks there, they know me. They won't murder the young people at the sight of Yakovlev.
Oh, very well. I'll clear the track. It'll take about an hour. Then you can be on your way.
Good to see you again, Yakovlev. Tell me, what news of the Tsar, the Tsarina?
You haven't heard, Colonel. They've been taken by the Ural Soviet. They're being held at Ekaterinburg.
Dear God. Can anything be done?
I'm trying, Kobolinsky. Believe me, I'm trying. I'd like to talk to the boy. To Alexei.
Oh, of course. I'll arrange it at once.
I have a gift for you. And a message.
A crucifix? Must be from Mama. Am I right?
Not entirely. The gift and the message go together, and really they're from your father. He told me he'd left something with you. A document. He told you to keep it safe and to give it to him only when all four of you were together. But he's changed his mind, and now he wants you to give the paper to me.
No. He said I must give it to nobody. He made me promise.
Alexei, did you tell me about the document?
Of course not.
Well, then how do I know? Only he or you could have told me. You didn't. So he must have. And he sent the crucifix to show you the message has come from him.
I'll bring the paper, Commissar.
The train I left in the charge of Colonel Kobylinski, who undertook to guard the contents, which he took to be the Tsar's personal possessions. Meanwhile, I rode back to Tumen. A foolish decision which cost me dear. As I began the journey, the document given to me so trustingly by young Alexei, and so much wanted by Lenin, Zakharov, and apparently half the world, was burning a hole in my pocket. I had to know what it contained. And so I reined in my horse, and in the last of the light I took the envelope from my pocket and broke the seal. My eyes followed the typewritten lines with growing incredulity. It contained not only what I expected, arms for the Romanov safety, but so much more that my senses reeled. Who knew? King George V? I couldn't believe it. Lenin? No, the deceit encompassed him too. But two men had known. Nikolai Romanov, ex-czar of all the Russias, and Basil Zakharov, perhaps the most sinister figure in Europe. And now there was a third. Henry George Dickerson.
You know where the deeds of Carfax House and that 50,000 sterling went to? Jack just discovered who owns account X253 at the Irish Linen Bank.
Really? Who?
How does UNICEF grab you?
I'm never too sure about these acronyms. Which one's UNICEF?
It's the Children's Fund, Horace. The United Nations Children's Fund.
Well, it's $250,000 to a good cause.
How the hell can you joke about it? We're a merchant bank, not a charitable institution.
It's a bank I've served a good many years, Lawrence, and not without some success.
I respect your judgment, Horace, you know that, but goddammit, we've spent $250,000, and for what? This so-called danger, are we any nearer knowing what it is?
I think so. We know it lies somewhere in the relationship between Zakharov and the Tsar, and we're learning more, stage by stage.
But this guy, Dickerson, he's as much a mystery man as ever.
Not quite. We know when he was born and when he died.
When he died? Or do we?
We've done a search. There's a certificate showing he died in the south of France on the 20th of October, 1968. No will and no property.
No property? He has 50,000 a year for...
None in France or England, I mean. None that could be traced.
You come up with anything else?
I've recruited a tame historian. Consider this, Lawrence. Fact one. In the first months of the First World War, the Tsar sent huge amounts of money out of Russia. And don't forget, at that time, he was undoubtedly the richest man on earth. Fact two, quoted in Lloyd George's war memoirs, relations between Britain and Russia were being jeopardized by the failure of the Vickers Maxim Company to supply munitions.
And Zakharov represented Vickers Maxim.
Precisely.
You're suggesting Zakharov fleeced the Tsar?
I don't see why not. He fleeced thousands of others.
So we may be pursuing some of the Tsar's millions?
It's possible. Now, will you let me read you Dickerson's instructions for finding installment four?
Yeah, I suppose so.
Right. You should keep a weather eye open for a name that will be appearing soon in the catalogue of one of the auction houses. The name is Mallard, and I'm afraid you will have to purchase the painting in question. The manuscript is in the frame.
Mallard? That mean anything to you? It sounds like a duck to me.
That's Mallard. Mallard. And no indication whether it's the name of the painting or the name of the artist. I know. Our tame genius.
Huntley?
Another little puzzle, Fergus.
Oh, what's going on, Sir Horace? Amusing yourself with detective fiction during the close season?
Near hit, Fergus. Closer than you realize. It's art this time. Name Mallard mean anything to you?
General knowledge, Sir Horace, but also current affairs.
You don't mean you know the answer?
I don't know the question, Sir Horace, but I do read the papers. Look at today's Times. A painting by Turner has just been released onto the market. It's been held by some bank for 30 years or more. It's up for auction at Sotheby's next week.
William Turner?
Joseph Mallard William Turner, Sir Horace.
Ah. How much might that fetch, do you think?
Not less than $2 million.
Oh, dear. You're not going to like this, Lawrence.
That ride on horseback from Tobolsk to Tumen was almost my undoing. The weather was atrocious, and when I reached the rail terminus, I already had a sore throat and was shivering. I boarded the train for Ekaterinburg, knowing that I was going to be very ill. When I arrived, I was feverish. I got a message to Ruzhsky, and the last thing I remember They're standing huddled against a wall, waiting for him to appear.
Are you awake?
What?
You are awake. No, be still. Here, sip this.
Oh, thank you, sister.
Prayer saved you, sir. All the nuns prayed so much.
Thank you. Where am I?
This is the convent of Our Blessed Lady in Ekaterinburg.
Well, how did I get here?
Your friend brought you, Monsieur Brunard. Oh, so long ago.
Well, how long?
Almost a month.
A month? Well, how can this be? What's happened?
Pneumonia. First one lung, then the other. Two bouts of severe illness. Twice you were nearly dead. Now you need food. Strength.
Tell me, sister, who holds the city now?
The Bolsheviks still. But the whites, they're advancing.
And the Tsar?
Sleep now. Sleep.
Yakovlev, how are you?
A little strong.
Good.
Thanks, Rushki, or Brunner, which is it?
Whichever suits. I couldn't let you die in the street, could I? What would Comrade Lenin have said, to say nothing of Mr. Zaharov?
Well, thanks all the same.
Yeah.
But tell me, the Tsar, what's happened?
They're here, in Ekaterinburg, the whole family. The children were brought from Tobolsk. But they're heavily guarded, and I haven't got that paper yet. I must find a way.
Yes.
We have to get it, or they don't stand a chance.
That paper, we must find out what was in it. The fifth part of Dickerson's narrative might throw some light, but at the moment we don't even know where that's coming from. There weren't any instructions with the last part.
I'm aware of that, and how much it cost the bank to get that damn painting. But we also know what happened next. The Romanovs were shot, all of them, in a cellar in Ekaterinburg.
On the 17th of July, 1918, or so it said.
Why, don't you believe it?
It's problematical, Lawrence. Some think they weren't, that they got away somehow. And you know that someone claiming to be Anastasia surfaced a little later.
Yeah.
But that's not what bothers me at the moment. I'm concerned about that paper. It was clearly worth a fortune, but also, according to Zaharov, capable of causing a calamity.
A calamity? The only calamity I see is in carrying on around Dickerson's obstacle course. He's got us paying out on a geometrical progression. It'll ruin us. And we're going on simply because of your opinion of Zaharov.
It's more than opinion, Lawrence.
How do you mean?
Our tame historian's been at work with some interesting results. Tell me, have you ever been to Monte?
Monte Carlo? Yes, but I never gamble.
You know anything about the place?
Well, it's in the Principality of Monaco, isn't it? What's the guy's name? Rainier. What's this got to do with Zaharov?
There is a connection, if you'll bear with me. Consider Monaco before the First World War. For 300 years, a part of France. The prince, family name Grimaldi, by the way, has very little power, but one thing he can do is grant a concession to open a casino. He gives it to a man named Blanc, who's soon coining money, not only for himself, but also for the royal family and most of the population. But then comes the 14 War. Business dwindles. Ruin stares them all in the face. So Grimaldi turns to someone who's still coining it. Basil Zaharov, the arms dealer, flourishing during the greatest war of modern times. A man whose influence is enormous, especially among the Allies, Britain and France.
Yeah, so what?
But did you know, Lawrence, that unexpectedly, in the middle of the war, the French Prime Minister concluded a secret treaty with Grimaldi that made Monaco a sovereign state again? It was part of a three-way deal. Straight afterwards, Zaharov paid $1 million for the casino and became, in effect, ruler of Monaco.
Smart guy.
That's not all. The date of the treaty between France and Monaco, the date Basil got his kingdom... Do you know?
No, surprise me.
The 17th of July, 1918.
Well, wasn't that the day that the...
Exactly. The day they shot the Tsar.
The bank has a final duty to fulfill for our deceased client, Sir Horace, now that we've received your check in settlement of the Turner. A small package addressed to Hilliard Cleef is already on its way to you by a special messenger.
I discharged myself from the convent hospital as soon as I was able to stand upright and made my way to Ekaterinburg railway station, the precious paper signed by the Tsar in my pocket. Also in my pocket were a few of the jewels and trinkets taken from the Tsar's collection, and about which I felt very guilty. I took the first train to Moscow and made my way to the Kremlin, where, not without some difficulty, I eventually found myself once again facing Comrade Sverdlov, the nominal head of state.
You gave me a job and stopped me doing it. You locked up Nikolai and had me sent away from Ekaterinburg.
The regional Soviet did that. So, the Zaharov paper's not signed.
That's right.
Where is it?
With Nikolai.
You should have made him sign it, my friend.
Made him.
A pistol at the head achieves miracles, I assure you. However, if the Romanovs are brought to Moscow, you'll get access. I promise.
It was an extraordinary situation. As far as the Bolshevik leadership was concerned, all they needed to do to obtain their arms was to send me back to Ekaterinburg suitably escorted. A pistol at the Tsar's head and I could be back in a week with the signed paper. Yet they preferred to keep me in Moscow and lose the chance of the weapons. Didn't they want them? Or was something else more important just for the moment? The Germans, for instance, now within striking distance of Moscow.
That reference to the Germans, Lawrence, I had my tame historian do some checking. He discovered that throughout the months of May and June, a German train was reported to have been standing with all blinds drawn at the station in Ekaterinburg.
Well, you think a private deal of some sort was being worked out with the Germans, Horace?
It's beginning to look like it.
Well, I've been doing some digging on my own. Here, in our own records, or rather, Jack has. Tell him what you found, Jack.
Well, Lawrence had the idea of going through the books to see if Zaharov had authorized any unusual payoffs, pensions for non-bank personnel, for instance.
And
I found three.
Really?
All from the early 20s. Friend Zaharov did it by buying annuities and cross-referring the payments to senior partners' notes.
And who were the lucky recipients?
Two are dead. A widow of a French politician called Brion and some fellow in the Balkans.
Which leaves?
An old lady, still living in Nice, name of Bronard.
You don't say. Jack, I understand the south of France is particularly agreeable at this time of year. Hot, but agreeable.
My name is Graves, madame. Jack Graves.
What do you want?
To talk to you, on business.
I have no business.
I'm from London.
Is it about my pension?
Well, yes. May I sit down?
No. Look at this hovel. Look at me, in this wheelchair for the past 12 years. 50 years of grinding poverty, half a century. £3 English a week. You hear me, monsieur, from London?
Your annuity? It was never increased?
Never. I wrote to the insurance company. I begged. Are you from them?
No, I'm from a bank. Now, I may be able to help.
Bank? Which bank?
I doubt if you'd know the
Which
name.
Which bank, monsieur?
Hilliard Cleef. It's a kind of private...
Zaharov. It's Zaharov's bank.
Well, Sir Basil Zaharov died in 1936.
I have been waiting all these years. I have waited. So you are Zaharov's man?
Well, no, madame. As I told you, he died long ago.
Like my pension.
Well, we can try to
sort some... Too late. 50 years too late. But I managed to say something, monsieur. For 50 years I saved
madame,
it.
Madame, put that down, please.
I saved it for Zaharov. I treasured it. I waited.
Madame Bronard, I beg you.
No, you tell me he's dead. Oh,
no.
Agent.
Madame.
No, no. You may live this down, Horace, but I never can. Not here in the city of London. Jack Graves was my man. He came with me from the States, and I got him shot, for God's sake. It was my fault.
No, no, it's not.
I set this whole ball rolling. So I'm going back to Wall Street where I feel safe. I'm going back where I can operate. I'm sorry if it means postponing your retirement for a year or two, but my mind's made up. Horace, you're back in charge.
Ah.
Ed Schneider here, Custer Bank of Santa Barbara. I got your little present, Sir Horace. Kind of cute, having a print of London Bridge in the middle of a California bank. We're having it framed.
Must have been a bit puzzling for you, Mr. Schneider. Puzzles us, too. It's an eccentric client, just following his wishes.
Yeah. Well, we've got something for you, too. Deposited years ago, along with our own instructions. Now, this may sound kind of crazy, but this packet only gets sent to you after we read something in the newspapers. You understand that, Sir Horace?
Not at the moment. What are you supposed to read?
That Hilliard Cleef have given something to the British nation.
Don't tell me. Is it £3.5 million worth of Turner?
Well, the amount isn't specified, but it's certainly a painting by Turner. We can't release the packet until we read of the gift to the British people.
Give me a week, Mr. Schneider. You'll see your announcement.
And you'll get your package.
I stayed on in Moscow from day to day, waiting for the Bolshevik leaders to come to a decision, hoping they would finally decide to bring the Tsar and his family to Moscow. Then, suddenly, I was summoned to the Kremlin.
Are you ready for another journey?
Where to, Comrade Sverdlov? And why?
To conduct the Romanovs out of Ekaterinburg.
Me?
Of course you. Nikolai has your paper, hasn't he? You'll meet him and his family. You'll escort them to the German train that has been waiting at the station for the past 2 months. And on the way, you'll get the paper from him. Signed. Is that clear?
Perfectly.
And here's your companion for the journey.
Companion?
Step forward, Comrade Golostyorkin. Comrade Golostyorkin is a member of the Ural Soviet. Commissar for war, aren't you, comrade? He will make quite certain that everything goes according to plan. My plan.
That is so, Comrade Sverdlov. You know Comrade Commissar Yakovlev, I believe, Comrade Beloborodov?
What's he doing back here? I sent him packing once.
He's here for a very good reason. Tell me, how's the military situation?
You hear those guns? The Whites have been joined by the Czech Legion. We're very nearly surrounded. There's not the slightest chance of halting them.
How long have we got?
A week, if we're lucky. Probably less.
And that is precisely why Commissar Yakovlev must be given the chance to fulfill his mission. Comrade Lenin was quite clear. We've got the opportunity of rearming our Red Army on a massive scale. If only we can get the Romanovs out of Ekaterinburg and on their way.
You see it, Comrade Golostyorkin, and I see it. But try persuading the rest of the Soviet. Try persuading Yurovsky. He's taken over as commander of the guard at the Ipatiev House at his own request. As a Jew, he hates the Romanovs. And he's been on the receiving end of some of the Cossack pogroms. The man's fanatical. He'd rather die himself than release his prisoners. And he's sworn more than once that not one of them is going to leave the house alive.
Then we must get them out without telling Yurovsky.
And it must be quick. If the Whites overrun us, they'll certainly try to restore the crown. Nikolai and the rest of them, especially the boy, must be out of Ekaterinburg before they arrive.
Baron von Kleber, I am Commissar Yakovlev.
At your service, Commissar.
I've been sent by Golostyorkin, Commissar for War. Well, Baron, your long wait's nearly over. We're going to get the royal family away.
Not before time. Do you know, we've been stuck at this railway station for nearly 9 weeks. What do you want us to do?
Get the train ready for instant departure. Keep steam up at all times. Be prepared to move at a moment's notice. We'll be bringing them here at night. One night very soon.
No good. Yurovsky's alerted.
What? How did it happen?
We received a telegram from Comrade Sverdlov. It said in so many words that if anything happened to Nikolai, then I, Comrade Golostyorkin, and Yurovsky would answer with our necks. So we went to see him.
He may only guess what's planned. I don't know. I think he's gone mad. He was talking of waiting for the Whites to march in, then executing the whole Romanov family before their eyes.
You know, I think Yurovsky's only living for the thought of killing them. I hope you can come up with a plan soon, my friend. Time is running out. Fast.
Good of you to come, Dr. Aston.
No, not at all, Sir Horace.
A straight question. Were the Romanovs slaughtered at Ekaterinburg?
Historians seldom like straight questions, Sir Horace. The general opinion has always been that they were, but there are doubts. Some years ago, two BBC reporters produced a book, The File on the Tsar.
I read it. Nikolai shot and the rest survived, I wonder. And what about all that money?
Well, the Tsar was certainly the richest man on earth in those days.
Who inherited?
Nobody. It's all been sitting in a score or more of European banks, I suppose, since 1918. If the woman calling herself the Grand Duchess Anastasia had succeeded in convincing the courts that she was indeed the Tsar's daughter, she'd have inherited the lot.
But she never did.
No.
And how does this tie up with that point you made last time we spoke, about those armaments orders for Russia?
Or rather, their non-delivery. It's all in Lloyd George's war memoirs. Just before the war, the Tsar placed vast arms orders in the West. Very few ever reached Russia.
Lloyd George, eh? Wicked old devil. Tell me about him and Zaharov.
Now, there's a fascinating affair. Zaharov was born an Armenian or Turkish, something exotic, and he became a French citizen. Yet the Welsh wizard slipped him a big gong in 1918, made him a KBE. And ever afterwards, Zaharov called himself Sir Basil. Though he certainly wasn't entitled to. My guess is Lloyd George fixed it with the College of Heralds.
A great fixer, Lloyd George.
None better.
Zaharov and Lloyd George, I suppose they were useful to each other.
How about partners?
Partners?
Well, this is pure speculation, you understand, Sir Horace. But are you aware of the reports that very soon after Russia entered the war in 1914, two British warships anchored in Archangel?
No. Go on.
Well, the New York Times reported that the ships were met by barges loaded with gold from the Tsar's own mines. The warships took it to Britain. It was to buy armaments. The Tsar's private contribution, you might call it, to the war effort.
How much?
Well, the story is about 500 million sterling at 1914 values.
Good God. Let's get this straight. 500 million pounds worth of gold delivered to Britain in 1914. No arms reached the Tsar. Revolution in Russia in 1917. The Tsar and his family murdered in 1918.
Yes, those are the facts. The question is whether there is a logical connection between them.
One other fact, Dr. Aston. Beneath our feet, in the vaults of this building, sits exactly 100 million pounds worth of gold bars. Mm. Placed there on the 1st of January 1915. That reserve is kept on permanent public display by agreement with the government and the Bank of England. If the gold price rises, bars are transferred to the Bank of England and vice versa. But over the years, the price of gold has risen inexorably, so the National Reserve has gained handsomely out of the arrangement.
Part of the Tsar's war chest. Yes, Sir Horace, I do believe you're right. What a brilliant immoral scheme. Zaharov and Lloyd George, they got their hands on the gold and used it. Lloyd George to cram the exchequer and Zaharov to underwrite his business.
And the arms were never delivered. So despite what Zaharov told King George, it would certainly have suited neither him nor the Prime Minister if the Tsar had arrived in England.
On the contrary, Sir Horace, from their point of view, the best possible outcome would be for the Tsar and all his family to perish.
A great pity we don't know where Nikolai keeps that paper.
Why do you say that, Ruski? Even if we knew, we couldn't get to it.
Because of Yurovsky, you mean? Oh, I don't know.
Are you saying that Yurovsky trusts you?
He trusts no one. But he knows I am on his side. He's heard me ranting about the Romanovs. I always ranted the loudest.
And would he let you into the Ipatyev house?
He might. But there wouldn't be much point. Nikolai never trusts me with the paper. No, we'd have to get you into him.
To get them all out would be better.
Oh, I think you're right. And I think I know how it can be done.
Hello, comrade. Who are you?
Rushki, with Comrade Golostchokin and Commissar Yakovlev. Here's my pass. But tell me, do you like fish?
Fish?
Because we have found a barrel of pickled herrings. Baltic herrings. And I thought, those fellows in Comrade Yurovsky's guard would enjoy those, am I right?
Yes, sir.
Yes, comrade. Come on, let's get it unloaded. There. Now, Jesus. I brought a couple of bottles of vodka as well.
Let me help.
I put in a jar of pickled cucumbers.
Come on.
Might as well do the job properly, eh, comrade?
What a feast. This way.
This way.
Open the door. Yeah.
What is this nonsense? Ruski, is that you? What's going on?
Brought something for your men, Yurovsky.
Huh?
I found a barrel stuffed full of pickled herrings at the Americana Hotel. Thought straight away your men would like them. We've brought something to go with them, too.
Vodka? How very kind of you. The men will be delighted.
Mm.
Who's this?
Yakovlev. Commissar Yakovlev. Comrade Yurovsky.
Weren't you expelled from the city?
He came back from Moscow with a personal dispatch from Trotsky.
Trotsky? What's he got in mind for the Romanovs?
There's some talk of a trial in Moscow. That's typical of Trotsky. Good propaganda.
And will it happen?
Oh, I doubt it. Apart from Trotsky, I don't think anybody cares.
Don't they? Interesting. Now, gentlemen, it's so hot this evening. Can I offer you some lemonade? The capitalists know how to look after themselves. There's a huge refrigerator brought all the way from America, so we have ice. You'd like some?
Very much.
Please. All right. I won't be a minute.
The moment he comes back, we grab him, right?
You better stop his mouth. We don't want half his guard in here.
I'll gag him. You got your pistol, Goloshchokin?
Here.
What's that?
It's inside the house.
It can't.
Quick.
It can't.
Why?
Fellas!
All of you. How could you? Butchers, barbarians, the whole family, the children. Who else?
Don't concern yourself. A few lackeys. Servants. They can go on serving their precious Tsar in hell.
Dear God, it's a charnel house.
Did you say you wanted some lemonade?
Sweet Jesus, what sort of monster are you? Women, girls, mowed out like animals.
Romanovs. Romanovs. That's what they were. They got what they deserved.
And so will you, by
God! That's enough, Yakovlev! And I'll take the gun, if you don't mind.
We're dead. All of us. When Sverdlov hears of this, he'll shoot us. He said he would.
Not if he doesn't know.
How can he not know?
I'll tell you how. Yurovsky, we need petrol, oil of vitriol...
All prepared, all arranged, long ago.
Good.
Everything's waiting at the Kopchaki mine.
We want another truck.
I'll go and see to it.
Yes. Mystery. That's what we must create. Mystery. It'll be to everyone's advantage. Yurovsky will take the bodies of 6 servants to the mine and burn them. The other bodies we'll bury Yakovlev. What? You and I. You can't object to giving the Romanovs a Christian burial.
But why all the rigmarole?
When the whites find the burnt bodies, they'll say, we murdered the Romanovs. But how can they prove it when medical tests will show conclusively they are the wrong bodies? The right ones, they'll never find.
The guards, you've forgotten them. At least a dozen guards know the truth.
And make sure they are killed. You're commissar for war. See it's done quickly. Send them to the front tomorrow. It's easier to arrange these things in the front line.
We came while it was still dark to a place a dozen miles to the east of the city. Spades we had brought. And as the first of the light began to grow across the sky, Renard and I bent our backs to the digging. It was a hard task. And as I labored, I swore 2 vows. Swore them on the grave I dug. I would kill Yurovsky, and I would kill Sverdlov. And then came a dreadful task. For the bodies had to be carried one at a time from the truck. When at last all 7 lay side by side in the grave, I was horrified to see Bronard produce a camera and take first 1 photograph and then another. It was at that moment I realized that it was Bronard who had organized their death and now needed a proof for his master, for Zakharov in London. I killed him with my own hands. Then I completed the burial of the imperial family, and bearing the camera with me, I left the forest.
Did you hear me, Horace? I said I was off.
What? Oh, it's you, Lawrence.
I'm just on my way.
Sit down, Lawrence.
I haven't all that much time. I'm booked on the afternoon flight from Heathrow.
Sit down. You see this?
What, the friend Dickiston again?
The final page of the final installment.
£4 million worth of garbage.
You think so? You haven't read this. You should. It's addressed to you.
To me?
In a way. You see, he realized he'd been, how do you put it, played for a sucker. Not only Dickerson himself, Zaharov had also double-crossed the King and Lenin and finally the Tsar. So Dickerson killed Brunner. Later he killed Yurovsky. Sverdlov died before he could reach him. That left Zaharov. Listen to this. He was already Sir Basil and rich as Croesus by the time I returned to England. I decided on a truer justice than mere assassination.
Zaharov's empire must be toppled by the greed that built it. And this I have arranged. You, whoever you may be, you began the process by questioning that payment of £50,000. Your greed was the trigger. And once the process was begun, nothing could stop it. What have I done? There are three papers, three pieces of evidence. One, the document signed by Nikolai Romanov, disclaiming not 50 but £500 million worth of gold sent to Zaharov. Two, my own sworn statement that the Tsar signed the disclaimer under duress. Three, the photographs, taken on the 17th of July, 1918. Their authenticity also attested to in a sworn statement. As you read this, copies of all three are on their way to you, but also to the Soviet government. They will, I am sure, be keen to acquire the sum that 500 million has grown into after more than half a century in the hands of such a fine and reputable bank as Hilliard Cleef. Yours faithfully, H. G. Dickerson.
But, Horace, we never had the 500 million. The 100 million in the vaults, yes, that can only be part of the Romanov bullion. But the rest?
The rest, Lawrence, must have been part of the deal with the government, with Lloyd George.
That's right. Of course.
400 million went to pay for the war. The deal left Zaharov with 100 million pounds worth, but not to spend. No, for something worth more, much, much more, to provide eternal stability for Hilliard Cleef. Oh, he was a cunning old fox.
Stability, my ass! A time bomb, Horace, ticking away beneath our feet for over 60 years. If anyone wins a claim for it in the courts, we're ruined, bankrupt.
We may not be the only ones. Lawrence, just think. The British government took 4/5 of the total. I'll talk to the governor of the Bank of England.
Horace, if this guy Zaharov was all you crack him up to be, surely he'd have done something to defend the bank against just that possibility? He knew Dickerson was after him. Would he have left his castle undefended?
No, by heaven he wouldn't. I'm not thinking straight. He had a contingency plan as sure as I'm sitting here. There's something somewhere, I'm certain, but what and where? Mallory.
It's nearly 11, Sir Horace. Will you be attending gold showing this week?
The gold showing? The gold! Come on, Lawrence. You tell that computer to keep the strong room door open till I order otherwise.
Now, if you say so, Sir Horace. What's going on?
I've just realized I know far too little about your work, Mr. Griffin. Please describe it.
There's less to look after than there used to be. Time was when the gold just about filled the vault. Inflation, sir. Pounds worth nothing.
Do you ever shift the pile of ingots?
Oh, never, sir. Standing orders. Most of it's been untouched by human hands since it was laid down. I even remember them building this strong room round the pile back in the 60s. We laid on a 6-man armed guard night and day till the job was done. Remember, Sir Horace?
Of course.
Those are mighty odd rules, Mr. Griffin.
Standing orders, sir. Got them all typed out nowadays.
Nowadays?
They started off in Indian ink on vellum, but the vellum got a bit fragile, so I put it away. Would you like a look? Here.
Well, now. Lawrence, just look at this. Zaharov's own hand. Did you ever see such precise instructions? Every detail. Ah.
You found something?
Listen. If at any time the second lowest layer of ingots be breached, such breach must take place only in the presence of the senior partner. He must be alone in the vault at the time.
Horace, are you thinking what I'm thinking?
I am. Something's hidden in there. Off with your jacket, gentlemen. We're going to shift those bars. Every blessed one.
Sir Horace!
Over here.
I think you better leave us now, Mr. Griffin.
Of course, sir, Horace. Standing orders. Call me when you want me.
Take a look at this.
A shell case. That's a Zaharov touch, if you like. Armaments manufacturer to the last. Let's see. Oh, yes, here it is. Open with senior partner's key.
You got yours?
On my key ring. Take this thing, will you? Hold it steady.
What is it? What's in there?
Document of some sort. It's from Zaharov. Zaharov speaking to us across more than half a century.
I discussed with the German High Command the idea of sending Lenin back to Russia in order to stir up revolution within the Tsar's empire, and thus effectively remove Russia from active involvement in the war. Lenin was, of course, prepared to barter anything in order to get back to Russia. A deal was struck. Lenin was to travel in a sealed train through the German lines with a safe conduct. In exchange, he provided information which would enable existing communist organizations inside Germany and Austria to be eliminated. It may seem unbelievable, but the enclosed papers prove beyond doubt that this is exactly what happened. They are Lenin's own lists of local members and cells of the German and Austrian communist parties, the originals, not copies. In brief, he was prepared to throw his own comrades to the wolves in exchange for the chance to get back to Russia. If these papers ever saw the light of day, they would strike at the very root of the Lenin legend. I feel certain that any Soviet government now or in the future would be deeply anxious to avoid their publication.
Thought I'd put you out of your misery, Ferdy. The Bank of England can rest secure. I've found it.
Found what?
The Zaharov defense.
Oh, nicely put. But are you certain?
It's checkmate, Ferdy. The Tsar, King George, Commander Dickerson, they're the losers.
While the winners, thanks to Zaharov, are the British government and the Bank of England.
Not to mention, of course, the respected, rock-solid merchant banking house of Hilliard Cleef.
In The King's Commissar by Duncan Kyle, dramatized by Neville Teller, Richard Vernon played Sir Horace, Dominic Rickards, Dickerson, Blaine Fairman, Lawrence, Alan Polomsky, Graves, Richard Tate, Sverdlov, Michael Deacon, Zaharov, Nicholas Courtney, George V, and John Moffat, the Tsar. Peter Krays played Lenin, Philip Sully, Smart, Alice Arnold, Gloria, Eva Stewart, Madame Bonnard, Ian Mickey, Fergus, Steve Hodson, Rushki, Simon Cuff, Petrov, Marcia King, Miss Frobisher, Christopher Scott, Bella Borodov, Ken Cumberledge, Golosh Chalkin, and Norman Bird, Griffin. The play was directed by Matthew Walters.